A few years ago, in Czech Republic, in Europe, at a summer camp, that means a gathering of devotees from around the country, in a rented camping site, I guess there are about 150 devotees there, I gave a lecture which I later heard came to be known as a revolutionary lecture about divorce, and the subject was no divorce, which they thought was revolutionary. Just see the state of the world, that when even among devotees a lecture is given on the theme there should be no divorce, then they think it's revolutionary. Since then, several... Anyway, I don't want to speak. It's too sad to speak about so many things. I remember seeing on the TV years ago. Must have been years ago because I don't watch TV. I haven't watched it for many years. But in Ireland, which was a Catholic country, I guess superficially, or it's still a Catholic country, divorce was illegal. I mean, there was no allowance for it. And we saw this interviews with women that, oh, my husband's so bad, he gets drunk and beats me and this all kind. You know, all I want to do is divorce him, and you know, then everything will be. The implied message was that, you know, it's so cruel, my life is being spoiled by this man, and I should just divorce him and find the real Prince Charming who will come and solve all my problems. And so this propaganda was going on. Now it's legalized in Ireland. So there's this idea that, you know, well, if it's bad, you have bad luck and you find someone who you don't like or who mistreats you, then move on to someone else. And of course, that wasn't there in India, also in Hindu culture, until one certain prime minister pushed it through for the sake of his daughter, who later became a prime minister also. And the family dynasty continues with Rahu in line. So, anyway, there was no thought of it, and yeah, you may have to, the woman may have to suffer, but then there's no, or the man may have to suffer, but there's no guarantee that if you go to someone else, you're going to be in a better situation. And opening the door to divorce means that if it's allowed, then everyone will take advantage, as I was saying the other day, because there'll always be some disagreement, and if the possibility of divorce is there, it will be used. So Srila Prabhupada spoke, I was saying that I gave this what was called a revolutionary class. Well, Srila Prabhupada was revolutionary. In many of the things he said were, in fact, almost everything he said was against the flow of human normal, what's normally considered the flow of human thought, or the prevailing worldview. And if he hadn't spoken these things, then what was he doing coming to America preaching anything anyway? Because if he was just, why would he come all the way to the West to say, yes, your meat-eating, gambling, illicit sex and intoxication is very good? If he had nothing novel to offer, or nothing better to offer, then why should he, what's he preaching anyway? And you'll find actually that the churches in America, because Christianity is divided into innumerable subsects, so the churches in America that are growing are not the ones that have changed to accommodate the public, but the ones who have some kind of standards among their beef eating. Because people, if you just go to the church and they say be nice, be good, and everything's All opinions are as good as each other. Then what do I have to come here to hear this for? That's what I got on TV. That's what I get everywhere. There's nothing special here. But the churches that say that you have to go to church on Sunday and you have to believe the Bible and you have to believe that if you're only in people in our sect go to heaven and everyone else goes to hell some more restrictions. No drinking, at least not more than 23 hours a day, or some restrictions should be. Those that give some restrictions, they're the ones that grow, because people feel that, well, there's something substantial here. And if you just say, well, everything's, you know, divorce is okay, homosexuality is okay, and meat eating's okay, and everything's okay, and you don't have to believe this, but if you like, you can believe it, then what's there? There's nothing there. So there's an idea that if you just make, well, just allow everyone, just be liberal and allow everyone to do whatever they like, and then we'll get many followers. But you won't, because there's nothing to follow. Or even if you do get such followers, just like all the, there's so many bogus gurus in, well, particularly in India, as it's the homeland of gurus. But they have many superficial followers, but there's nothing to follow. So there's no meaning to it anyway. So Srila Prabhupada, he spoke against almost everything that modern society stands for and believes in, not just to be a maverick, which means someone who makes a nuisance of themselves just for the hell of it, but because he wanted to present the actual truth, which is valuable for all of human society, to give actual direction about how to live in a manner that people may achieve the actual goal of life. And because the modern society fits this description, pravritting cha nivritting cha janana vidurasuraha, he had to speak against it. It necessitated, okay, I'm going to smile, everyone who wants to take a photo, please take it, and then stop. Okay, smiling over, and now it's time to kindly listen and take photos later if you like. So Srila Prabhupada, he went against everything because everything is running in the wrong direction. And it's easier to go with the flow, as the saying goes, but it's not a very good policy if the flow is flowing toward hell. Which it is. Modern society is not only flowing toward hell, it's flowing right in hell. They people say they don't believe in hell, but they're busy creating it right here. Their whole society is a hell. So Srila Prabhupada went against the flow, or to some extent he is the echo on. Turn that off. Turn the echo off. He went with it to some extent because preaching means that you have to make some connection with people and then bring them, or attempt to bring them, from the point they're at to the desired point. So there has to be some kind of connection or interacting with people. But Srila Prabhupada, he went with the flow to the extent that he could arrest it and change it in the right direction. And again, as I stated early in the first of this series of lectures, that it appears that many of our devotees have misunderstood some of Srila Prabhupada's earlier, not exactly compromise, you could say adjustments, and taken that to be the standard that should be there for all time. For instance, in the early days of ISKCON, because Srila Prabhupada, again, Prabhupada was preaching among hippies who had absolutely no culture, not even to the level of ordinary Western people, which is pretty low. So Srila Prabhupada didn't attempt to do the impossible. As Srila Prabhupada wrote about having women in the ashram, he says, my godbrothers criticize this, but And one shouldn't attempt to do the impossible, to immediately separate completely men from women. And it's interesting that even though the Gauriya Mat, they criticize Srila Prabhupada for doing this, but those who have now followed Srila Prabhupada's examples and are preaching in the Western world, they all do the same thing also. And increasingly in ISKCON, they don't do it in the Western world, interestingly. Although that's another controversy. There's so many controversies. Anyway, that's a misunderstanding. Just like Srila Prabhupada, in the beginning, the boys and girls were all dancing together in the kirtan, and after some time, I don't think Srila Prabhupada directly told them not to, but that was maybe instituted by, it's suggested that it was instituted by certain sannyasis who, they went to India and they saw all these conservative standards, it's complained about like this. But they just saw what's a natural human culture and instituted that. And Srila Prabhupada never protested about that. He never said, no, why are the men and women dancing separately or whatever? They should all mix up. He brought devotees to India with the express purpose of letting them see and experience the culture, the natural culture in which Krishna consciousness can grow. And he wanted devotees to adopt this, because Prabhupada, it's like the Ritvikvadis. They say that, well, Prabhupada introduced something completely new and he can do that. But Prabhupada always presented himself as a standard guru, that a standard guru is one who follows guru, sadhu and shastra. He didn't attempt to bring in anything which was against the principles of shastra. He was a follower of shastra. And an acharya means one who knows how to, who knows the principles of shastra and how to apply them in different times and places and circumstances, because in the shastra there are many different directions. And some are suitable for some people and some are suitable for others. And the Brahmin, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Shudras, they have many things they do are similar and many things they do are different. And even in different parts of the country, or different, the Veda Shakas, the branches of the followers of the Vedas, they may, different Brahmins in different Shakas will do things in different ways, or dress in different ways. So there are various smritis, which are or codes of behavior, which are derived from Shastra and the principles of Shastra, and which are written by the acharyas of various Vedic and or sub-Vedic schools, which are based on the Shastra and which are suitable for their followers. So, Srila Prabhupada, in the beginning, he was very liberal, but he said that gradually Of course, even before he went to the West, Srila Prabhupada was talking about Varnashram and the need to institute that. And before him, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And before him, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, to establish actual Varnashram in contradistinction to the Asuri Varnashram, which was going on birth alone and by exploitation. But Srila Prabhupada, he emphasized this toward the latter part of his time that he was present with us in this world. And he described some of the principles, and again, revolutionary or unthinkable in the modern world. And it seems that many of our devotees, they don't want to accept it. They've kind of forgotten it, or they think, either they just ignore it, or they do something completely different, or some of them will directly say that Prabhupada got it wrong, he didn't understand us Westerners, which is offensive in the extreme. And some say, well, that's for the future, for Varnashram, we'll just put it off to some indefinite future, and in this way it's just another way of shelving it or forgetting it altogether. But as I was saying last night, Srila Prabhupada, he spoke a lot about the role of women, actually, because as I was pointing out from Arjuna speaking in Bhagavad Gita, in many ways, women are the cornerstone of society. their role is vital. But to execute that role well, early marriage, I was speaking about many children, there may be, it's not mandatory for everyone, but there may be polygamy. That was nowadays due to some Christian interpretation. There's monogamy is becoming accepted as the standard all over the world, but it wasn't in Hinduism, Buddhism, or Islam. And where it came from in Christianity, I also don't know, because it doesn't seem to be in anything that Christ himself spoke about. So, of course, we have the role of Ram, famous as the Ekapatni Vrata. But then there are other forms of God also who had many wives. Krishna very kindly delivered 16,100 women who couldn't have got other husbands because they'd already been in the house of someone else. Seriously, if anyone's interested in that, they can ask me about that later, because I feel the time is long overdue for that, and it can't be done very openly within our ISKCON, I guess, because we're not going to brag about it, because there's so much misunderstanding about this. But while on one hand I preach to young men who are not married that if you're not married, better don't be married. On the other hand, I preach to the men and women that, well, now you're married, make a good job of it. Don't make a mess, don't make a fuss. So, the Grihastha's role is absolutely vital, because the society, the Paramahamsas can go off to the forest and live on leaves. But the society is comprised mostly of Grihastas. So, but people don't know how to live as normal, sane human beings. To be insane is normal in the modern age. And to have unbridled material desires is considered laudable. Self-control and or respectable dharmic living. There's propaganda against. I was saying this, Kamaraj. He's promoting you must have sex every day, which is animalistic. So another thing that Srila Prabhupada said about young women, which is revolutionary, he said that the girls of our devotees. No need to send them to school. They can learn at home to read, so they can read my books. He considered that the most important part of education. And they can learn how to, he said two things. They should learn chastity and how to cook very nicely. These two things. And Prabhupada said, if any girls are taught by this, you can listen to it. It's available on the recording. I will personally arrange their marriage to a first-class boy. Prabhupada said that. But just the opposite nowadays. Girls, they don't know how to cook. Maybe they can put some rice in the rice cooker and not spoil it. And chastity, it's a joke. It's just a joke, that's all. But then the last laugh is on them. The joke's on them. Because, like as I was saying, they don't. No one cares for them. No one loves them. And you'll find so many young women, they're in the college, they have their boyfriend, and they're being used regularly by the boyfriend, and then he just says, well, okay, thanks, that was good while I was at college. Well, you're not going to marry me? No. And there's no sex before marriage means there's no commitment, no response. Marriage means there's a commitment. Now you have to take charge and look after. Responsibility. You're responsible to your family, to your caste, to the whole society. But then animalistic, just mix and enjoy, and then you're left with... you lost your virginity, your respectability, and you got absolutely nothing in return, except for a little flirtatious enjoyment. So Srila Prabhupada said that, and it's no doubt very difficult, not only for the girls, but for many men to accept. They think, oh, I have to make my daughter a MP or a space pilot or something like that. What are they called? Astronaut. Now India has a... There's no Rashtrapati, there's a Rashtrapatni. So, what does that mean? I can be the wife of the Rashtra. This my daughter should get ahead and all this kind of thing. But Srila Prabhupada's ideas were very different. And as I said, as Prabhupada himself represented, it's not his ideas, they're all Krishna's ideas. Prabhupada, he recognized that among his female disciples especially, it was often difficult to accept these things. He knew that, and that he didn't force them to come into these roles, but he preached about it and said that these things should be introduced. You can't force anyone. And Prabhupada often encouraged his capable women disciples to serve Krishna in ways that they had been educated to do so. Probably the most prolific photographer in the history of ISKCON has made, probably more than anyone, made photos for Back to Godhead and other publications, is Vishakha Dasi, who's married to Yadubha, who's a cinematographer. So, of course, she was married, and they're still together. I heard a lecture by one of my godbrothers, and he was saying, the other day I was saying to my wife, by the way, we've been married, the same wife I've had for the last 30 years, and everyone started clapping. Because in the West, that's a great achievement. And it's a great, it's like, oh, really? Oh, being married to the same wife? Oh, amazing. It's like, really? It's something so unusual that they thought it was a great achievement. So you get some idea how sick the Western world is, and actually in social terms, how sick the social understanding, or at least the social praxis of us. Praxis means practices based on a certain understanding. They've got the wrong understanding, and then the result of that is a poison tree gives poison fruit. So, I highly recommend that you don't adopt these liberal or modern Western ideas which are being promoted in ISKCON, because the Western ISKCON devotees especially, they don't have a good record of following even basic dharma. It's not that they're not devotees or they're all demons or any such thing, but it's a weakness of Western society in particular. There are many misunderstandings, and some misunderstandings that women should be submissive to men. Well, that's there in India also, that some men think, well, that means that you have a, that gives you a license to slap them around and mistreat them and not have any consideration for them. Another misunderstanding is that, well, actually, I'm married, but actually I should have been renounced. So, all right, I got a wife and three kids, and it's a hell of a burden, and she's not beautiful anymore. I think it's time to take sannyas. So this is bogus. But I've spoken to supposed-to-be devotees who say, no, actually it's better for my spiritual life to renounce. Well, that might be in the case of Ramanuja. He left his wife. Of course, she was offensive to his guru. Raghavendra Swami, also young man, left his young wife who She didn't have to, but she threw herself down a well and committed suicide. But then what they did for the world was something remarkable. So, but people who want to so-called renounce are just, it's actually an excuse because they're irresponsible. Not that they've got anything particular to offer the world, except their irresponsibility. So, men should do their duty, women should do their duty. And even if you don't like your wife, or even if you don't like your husband, it's you've taken that vow, and it should be followed. So, many of the things Srila Prabhupada said were revolutionary. Prabhupada actually had a plan to change the whole human society. As I was saying, it's easier to go with the flow and just, well, and you can say, yeah, we can tell everyone, yeah, you can work on your job 12 hours a day and also chant Hare Krishna, but practically speaking, most people in the modern world, especially in India, where work hours are extremely long and the labor market is extremely competitive. And the situation is that most of our devotees, they don't have time for Krishna consciousness. They don't have time to chant properly, to perform kirtan properly, to associate with devotees, to read the books. If we're actually going to do the minimum sadhana that Srila Prabhupada gave to his disciples, those living in the temples, it's minimum 4 hours in the morning and 1.5 hours in the evening. That's the minimum, what to speak of private reading. That most of our devotees, they get even, if you say 1.5 hours for chanting japa, even most of our devotees don't do that. And then most of their japas chanted, if they chant at all, even having vowed to chant 16 rounds a day, many of them find it difficult to keep up with that. And it's done, you know, in between dressing the kids and then going to work, and maybe squeeze in one or two at your, when others are having their coffee break, and like this. So it's not at all suitable for advancement in Krishna consciousness. So Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish farm communities, and he said that the main purpose of this, there are many purposes, but the main one is that people will have time. People will have time to practice Krishna consciousness. And we say, well, we start a farm and there's so much work, but then the idea is that you don't take like a, you know, 500 acres with three people to work it, and you're going to be overworked. Just take what you can manage. Live simply, produce what you need. So yes, many of Srila Prabhupada's proposals were revolutionary, but on the other hand, if we don't take them up, we're not going to be Krishna conscious. It's going to be very difficult to be Krishna conscious. And we are liable to be compromised more and more by modern society due to living on its terms. Yesterday I was saying, should women work? Well, ideally no, because they have to look after, they have to have children and look after the children, and if they're working, then they can't give their whole attention to the children. So economically they can contribute also, just like we find that in traditional families, women, if there are many of them in the home, then they're not fully, not every one of them is fully looking after the kids all the time. Kids may be running around and there are a few women, and they may also do weaving or basket making, or they can, at home they can, and also helping in the fields. And there are different castes also. The Brahmins, their wives will, it depends what the Brahmins are doing, but the traditional Brahmins, they had a lot of, doing puja was a big job. So the wives would help with that. Or the Vedic Brahmanas, they'd perform yajna at home 3 times a day, and the wife has to help with that. So they were busy in various ways. Also, we see Draupadi, wife of kings. She was managing the whole household, which was it was a palace, managing the whole palace, which is like managing a company or something, with people coming and going all the time, and appointments and feeding everyone at all different times, and it was a major job. So it's not that women don't have any economic contribution to make, but it's best done from the home, because if you're out at the office all day, then you spend more time with, the woman spends more time with men who she's not married to, than with her husband. And she may get to like them more, which often happens, because she comes home harassed from a day's work, and he comes home, and then they in the nuclear family means nuclear explosion so many times. And so, but at the office, the men, they're often, you know, trying to, and the women, they're flirting together, and it's the nature of Maya that men and women become attracted. So it's adharmic, actually, for women to go out and mix with so many men. They should be, as Srila Prabhupada often quoted, women should be in their childhood under the protection of their father, in their, throughout most of their life, under the protection of their husband, and in their older age, under the protection of their elder sons. So even for young women who are not married to go out and work, it's adharmic. It's adharmic that they shouldn't be married. They should be married. And often the families are arranging it, and at the age of 28, they think, well, it's about time you are married now. But actually, at the age of 28, the girl who's married, she should already be married and seeing her grandchildren. Yeah, that's how, you know, 14 years old or whatever, they have children, and then the next generation like that. It's a normal thing that people used to be in the home with their great-grandparents, and maybe five generations used to be like that. But times have changed now. But according to Manu, if the father has not arranged after maturation, if after the second menstruation, if the husband, if the father has not arranged a husband, she can find her own. So, women searching for their own husband, in one sense, is not so bad. It's not good, it should be arranged by the parents, but if the father fails in his duty to do so at a young age, then, according to Manu, in that unusual circumstance, then the wife, or the not wife, can become a wife by her own searching, but that's not a very good system. We find that Srila Prabhupada said his sister was 11 years old, and his mother said to her to Prabhupada's father that if you don't get her married quick, I'm going to go drown myself in the Ganga. They were very serious. 11, and she's not married, you know, it's terrible. It's a fact. It's adharmic. There may have been some case, like we see among the Kshatriyas, that I'm not exactly sure at what age they had their Swayamvar, but Rukmini, when she was being married, the marriage was supposed to be to Shishupal, as you all know, but something happened which meant that she didn't marry Shishupal. But all the kings who had come for the wedding, she was so beautiful that they all fell off their horses and all this kind of thing. So, I mean, generally, a girl, a pre-pubal girl, doesn't incite their full beauty is not manifested, you may say. So it would appear that she was already mature at the time of her marriage. So, you have your Varnashram research team. There are many things to be researched, but there may be cases in which, in traditional society, even, in which the girls are married after puberty, but the general norm is that early. There's a whole lecture on this by Prabhupada, actually, called The Psychology of Chastity, it was titled. Very interesting. So, another point, women as leaders, should they be leaders? Well, in one sense they are, and gurus, women are the first guru, mother is the first guru, considered the first guru. Not a guru in exactly the same way as one's spiritual guru, but the primary principles which the acharyas teach, the mothers and grandmothers, they inculcate them in the children. The children learn stories of Rama and Krishna from the mothers and grandmothers, right? Traditionally. And apart from that, just how basically to behave. The women, by being very chaste and submissive to their husbands, teach the children how to respect superiors. Privately, she may disagree with the husband, but in front of the children or in front of anyone else, she shouldn't argue with him or disagree with him. It sets a very bad example for the children. Even one generation ago in India, the children, they were so sweet and so nice because they were trained like that, that the disagreement may be there, but that's a private thing. So, as leaders, Srila Prabhupada, he wasn't in favor of that, and the culture generally hasn't promoted that. Srila Prabhupada, when he went, he had an appointment to meet Indira Gandhi, and he had a list of proposals for her. One of them was to make Sanjay the king, and Indira the queen mother or something like that. So he didn't like the idea of Indira Gandhi being the leader. He wanted to make Sanjay, who was the king. He proposed that there should be a... Indira later became infamous for her emergency and the rule that she imposed. But actually Prabhupada was in favor of that, just that it should be in the, or Sanjay should do it. And actually in many ways, so I'm told, I came to India just after the emergency, I came to stay, but in many ways things were better. There was law and order, and the trains ran on time, which has never happened since. And it's just like when I was in Bangladesh, I remember I was in Bangladesh, and they would go through periods of military dictatorship and democracy, and it's much better actually in many ways during the military dictatorship, because there was law and order, there were no riots, at least you knew who was in charge of the country, and there wasn't constant political turmoil. In many ways it was better, and then they either would assassinate the military ruler or arrest him for corruption or something like this. But maybe it's better to have one corrupt ruler than to have 500. And then the whole... Anyway, it's not good to have any corrupt rulers. But then the head of the country, they should have some wealth also. They shouldn't be... It's not like the communistic idea that the head of the country lives in a little hut like the factory workers. They should have some... Prabhupada said that. The kings, they should have a big palace and show some opulence. And in this way, the kings, they maintain culture. But they are cultured themselves, and they protect the people, and they need to have a lot of opulence, both for their own psychological need, you could say, and so that people respect here as a king. And kings were not just in the modern age, some peanut farmer gets some votes, or some second-rate movie actor, and they become the head of the most powerful country in the world. The peanut farmer was Jimmy Carter. And the second-rate movie actor means Ronald Reagan. He was a movie actor, but not even a very good one. Well, he acted well enough to fool all the people of America that he was fit to be. But But the Vedic system is better, that someone is trained from the beginning of life how to run a state. Where not that someone, he's a peanut farmer, and he thinks, well, how about being the president of America? And, you know, they have no qualification, no training, and all of a sudden they're in this post. So the Vedic system is to train people from the beginning. Like I say, you have your education, but at the end of 20 years of education, you still might not have a vocation. And you still don't know what it is. Or you may be doing something, in many cases people, they get trained to do something they don't really want to do, but they do it because it brings in money. Mostly people are going to be doctors, and if not doctors, then engineers. And they may not want to do that, but it's just they're pushed into that because they'll think they'll get more money. So you spend your whole life doing something you don't like. Whereas in the Vedic system, you're trained from the beginning to do something which is naturally in accord with your psychophysical propensities. Just like women, believe it or not, maybe the whole society will wake up to this amazing discovery at some point in time that it's natural for women to have children. And that it's natural for women to like having children. And instead of training them not to have children, just have as few as you can and work like an ass in the marketplace, they might actually encourage them to have children. It'll probably be too late when they do that, because what's already happening in Europe is that because they don't, the native people don't have children, or they don't, then they bring in Muslims from Africa and Turkey and different places to do all the jobs like cleaning the toilets, which the high-class European people don't want to do, and all of a sudden they find that the Muslims are breeding like anything while the Europeans are not breeding, and they think within two generations the majority population will be Muslim. And they, well, I guess if you're a Muslim, you'll think that's a good thing, but it actually, they stop breeding, or the hamdo hamari ek, or even hamdo hamari do, means that the population is going to go down. And then whatever your civilization is, it's going to be overtaken by some other group of people. So it's actually a demographic disaster. But they want to enjoy, you know, why should I have children? Let someone else have children. So they made it in Russia now. They're paying the women to, they give them special benefits to have more children. But it's difficult for them to do it because they see many parts of the country are being overrun by Chinese and Muslims, and which they don't want. But they can't come out openly and say that actually we just want Russians. So that will happen also. That's happening in India also. While all the so-called high class, or most of the Hindus, they go along with Hamdo, Hamari Do, but there are others who it's Hamdo, or sometimes Teen Char Panch, and then Hamare Kitna Hai, Vaskara Bara, or Kal Tera Hoga. So, you know, you can't keep a count on them. So, yeah, women's natural places in the home, and as leaders of society, why do they even want to do that anyway? I mean, I guess everyone in this material world has got the propensity, controlling propensity. So women, they can execute that very nicely with children. When they want to control everyone else, it becomes, pretty intolerable. This trying to control everyone. Have children and control your children, you know, and then be happy with that. Otherwise, as I say, the Srila Prabhupada wasn't in favor of that. I heard it said that, I've never heard this confirmed, that Prabhupada said that because India's ruled by a woman, that means there's no kshatriya in the whole country, no genuine kshatriya, because he couldn't tolerate to be ruled by a woman. And traditionally, of course, well, that's another point, because of the whole machine age and technological age, the traditional society and the norms and usages of traditional society have been undermined. So traditionally, there would have to be men as leaders. The kshatriyas, they weren't just we sometimes, in our, we say Kshatriyas are managers and administrators, but they're principally they're fighters. They have to be able to fight. They have to be able to go in the forest with a sword and kill a tiger. And not a drugged up tiger, but a real live, powerful tiger. So they have to be fearless, they have to be real men. So women, their bodies are naturally weaker in some ways. In other ways, women's bodies may be stronger. Having children is it's a great physical strain, which leaves the woman exhausted for some time. It's another reason why women need protecting, because they need to look after the children. The children need protecting, and after they give birth, then they may be very weak, sometimes for weeks afterwards. So better that women stick to their natural role and men stick to their natural roles. Women, yeah, they're leaders in many ways. As I was saying, superficially the man may be the head of the home, but practically the women are. But that leading is in a more subtle way. The modern idea is that women should be out there and, show your manliness. Oh, what was that? Sorry. Show that you're a real man. Feminine qualities are subtle. In this way, they get, as Prabhupada pointed out, if the woman serves her husband, she gets, just by being nice to him, he has to work and she gets everything she wants. So it's actually a much better deal. Without having to go out and work, you get what you want just by being nice to the husband. If the husband and wife, if they're both grumpy, he comes home from work and of course, if people are working according to their actual psychophysical propensities, they won't come home all grumpy. Or in traditional life, just like the man, for instance, if he's a shopkeeper, he'll open his shop at 10 o'clock and there's no like heavy business, and people come and maybe look at the cloth a bit, sell a little, and then they close the shop again at midday and then go home, take lunch, take a little rest, go in the evening. That was how the shops used to be. Now they open early and close late, and the shops are, it's like heavy pressure, competition with other shops, and so. But previously it wasn't such a frustrating way of life. Women as gurus. Well, there are indications that Srila Prabhupada wanted his daughters, spiritual daughters, also to take that role. I would say that let's get our varnashram duties together, because just like we had, there have been a few exceptional, as Prabhupada said, they can be guru, but in other cases he said, but in special cases, some who are really exceptional. But first, let's get our varnashram roles together. Just like, here's an example. Would you like to listen to and be instructed by a brahmachari who didn't follow his brahmachari duties properly? No. Would you like to listen to a grihastha man, married man, who didn't follow his grihastha duties? Sannyasi? No. So why would you want to listen to a woman who doesn't follow her Sri Dharma? And if she's following her Sri Dharma, why would she want to get up in front of all the men and instruct them and teach them? So yeah, let women teach and preach, but among women is better. Not that, there's a young woman, 25 years old, and she's sitting on a big platform and there's all men and listening to her, and that's not very chaste. We may say, well, it's a spiritual activity, but Again, the whole understanding of Varnashram is that it's there to regulate our lower, regulate our lower propensities and channel them towards a higher propensity. And as Srila Prabhupada said in one purport, that the whole purpose of Varnashram is to overcome the sexual impulse. So, that's not very well done by mixing men and women and giving women very prominent roles. So women can be leaders, but it's better to do so in a subtle way. It's interesting that Srila Prabhupada didn't make any GBC members from his women disciples, isn't it? Now, it's one of Srila Prabhupada's most prominent women disciples at that time was Yamuna, who was married to Gurudas. And she said that Prabhupada had said that he would have made her a GBC, but because she was a woman, he didn't. And that's interpreted to mean that, well, because the men were so egoistic and they wouldn't want to accept it, therefore Prabhupada didn't make her a GBC. But what he said was, because he was a woman, she didn't. He did that interpretation, because the men were so egoistic. And now we're more enlightened, so now we should have women GPCs. That's the logic, because Prabhupada's followers at that time were so... the men were also stupid and egoistic, and now we're more enlightened. So now we should have women GPCs. But practically, he didn't. And Prabhupada didn't make women temple presidents either. Except in one case, I think it was in 1968 or something. There was a husband and wife in some place in America, that they were the temple. He was the temple president and she was the other member of the temple. Then he left her and left Krishna consciousness, and Prabhupada said, okay, you be the temple president. But otherwise, he did say that for Grihastha temple presidents, that the temple president should be like a father and to the devotees, and his wife should be like a mother to all the devotees. So, anyway, this is food for thought. Should classes by Mataji's in public or in temple halls? Well, I just addressed that. It's can be done, but better that women preach among women. Prabhupada said that women can also give lectures because we want many preachers. But he said if there's a man there who's also qualified, that better a man gives. Kirtan also, again, you see in many spiritual or religious Hindu institutions or whatever, that they're separate Mahila satsangs. Actually, in our temple, our ISKCON temple in Baroda, every day there's a Mahila satsang. Some local women, they're Vallabh Sampradaya actually, not our own Sampradaya. They come at every afternoon, they come in the temple hall and sit and they do their bhajans. And it's just for them. They do it every day because they're not out at work. They have time to come to the temple every day for satsang. So it's better they do their satsang among themselves. And among our resident or our ISKCON women, we have also a weekly satsang or twice weekly. Like that, in which they sing and they read together, and it's better among themselves. So we can also have that, women's satsangs, rather than maybe women leading kirtans, maybe among grihasthas, if they all feel comfortable with that, but maybe better not also. Like I say, traditionally, well, when you say traditionally, there are more conservative strains of Hinduism and less conservative strains also. But we have to be careful. That's all, because the example is there of butter and fire. Bring them together, and the automatic reaction is there's some melting. Dancing in kirtan, yeah, Prabhupada encouraged his Western women disciples to do that. But I saw in India when Prabhupada was present that his women disciples in the Indian ones especially, they'd just stand at the back and they'd hardly move. And I don't know that Prabhupada ever told them to start dancing, because that's the culture. The women, respectable women, don't dance in public. Maybe from different castes or something like that. Maybe from the Rajasthani or cowherding caste or something, they might dance in public, but those who consider themselves more respectable, they don't do so. So dancing, again, you have to be careful, because there may be some sexual connotations there, and even women, their whole style of dancing, the way their bodies are made, this kind of jumping up and down vigorously, like you see the men do, it's not good for women at all. So their bodily kind of. So, again, I'd suggest separate satsangs. And definitely, I mean, when you see a young woman dancing vigorously at the front of the temple in front of all the men, then you know there's something wrong. So, dancing, I would say, if they're going to do it better toward the back, actually, Prabhupada in Los Angeles, he said the men and women, they can be men on one side, women on the other side, and we often see that in the temples. But in Los Angeles, he arranged that the women would be on top. There was like a platform on top, and the women can go on top at the back, and then they have a nice darshan, but they don't want to go. Prabhupada said they'll be dancing on the men's heads. Like a completely separate arrangement, separate entrances. But even though it's well known that Prabhupada said to do that, they don't want to do it. And they don't. And in Vrindavan also, there was a separate arrangement made for the women at Prabhupada's Samadhi to go on top. They won't go. And there's tiny little space, and the men and women are all cramped close to each other. So, better they have their own space and dance separately, if they're going to dance. Menstruation rules. Well, often women ask me about that, and I tell them, just in India, just do what your grandmother would have done. That's all. You know, nowadays, because they have to go to work, they go to work, and the traditional system is that they would stop all activities. I guess unless they're lactating. But they'd stop all activities and go to a separate little house. One devotee told me that when he told a Western woman about this, Western devotee said, "Oh, what a wonderful idea. You can have 3 or 4 days, just, you know, take a break. Very good idea, and just be peaceful." So actually it is good, because women do have intense lives. From early in the morning until late at night, they're serving, and it may be throughout the night if they have young children also. So, and menstruation is, it's difficult. I mean, I haven't personally experienced it in this life, but from what I can understand, it may be physically painful, and mentally it's also in modern terms, that would be explained in terms of hormonal disturbances. So it's a difficult time, and the traditional system is that women are isolated. And apart from that, there's so many germs floating around, so they shouldn't cook or anything like this, or even touch people, and it's considered inauspicious even to see them. Of course, if a woman is a Vaishnava, it's always auspicious, but still there are some, again, we're talking, it's the interaction of the social and the spiritual, and as long as we're in this world, we have to follow some social norms. Now, in one letter, Prabhupada was asked about women serving the deities during their menstrual period, and he said, according to the Smarta Vidhi, is not allowed, but according to the Goswami Vidhi, it is allowed, and the deity worship should not be stopped. So, That's the main point. The deity worship shouldn't be stopped. It's just like if you're worshipping deities and someone in the family dies, well, according to Smarta Vidhi, there's no more deity worship. But then the Vaishnavas have a different understanding. The deity is Krishna, so you don't stop worshipping him. You don't stop feeding him. That has to go on, even if you're in the Ashoch period. So similarly, if there's no one else to do that, then it's not that everyone in the home starves for 3, 4, 5 days. Again, in the traditional system, there are many women, and if one or two are not feeling well, as the euphemism goes, then there's always others to cover up, so the cooking never stops. The deity worship never stops. The deity worship at home, the women may also perform or help with that. But in modern life, just defect number 20,300,403. There's so many. Everything in modern life is so militates against all sanity, because you have the nuclear family, and then all the burdens on one woman. And so, the deity worship should go on, and the cooking should go on. But it's not, obviously, it's not a good standard. It's just like you don't cook for the deities or cook for anyone if you pass stool. So menstruation, something like that. It's like you're constantly, it's contaminated because of the menstrual flow. So obviously it's better not to do these things. But in modern life, the women, they go to work, and there's no difference practically, and so they think, well, you know, I can go to the temple also. But again, I would say, do what your grandmother and your great grandmother and your great great grandmother and all the way back to Draupadi and beyond, what they did. Draupadi, of course, she was when she was dragged by that demon Dushasan into the public hall, she was in her menses, which made the whole thing even a lot worse. So, again, it's the idea that we got something better, or we know better. But better follow the old rule. The rules are there, for they're not. It's not just some people, they would do just some cranky people wanted to make some stupid rule. But there was a purpose for that. Very good purpose. Another thing is, another reason why women need protection, I forgot to mention this before, is apart from menstruation being a difficult period every month, every month unless they're pregnant, of course, is menopause, which is usually a very difficult, again, it's in modern terms that would be explained as massive hormonal changes, and it can be very difficult for the woman. And that, over a period of several years, and it can be very difficult for the women she's around too, because she's being difficult. And but if she's not trained to be submissive, polite, respectful, then during menopause she could be very nasty, actually, and because like that, the mind becomes very disturbed. So again, it's another reason why women, they need to be married, they need to be looked after, and they need to be helped through that very difficult period. Once in Australia, I was lecturing in a university, and I mentioned this point, women should be protected. And at the end, one young woman asked me, why do women need to be protected? And my answer was, of course, there are many reasons. I said, they need to be protected from lusty men. So that's a fact. Prabhupada, he said that a 16-year-old boy can travel anywhere all over the world by himself, but a young woman can't. Prabhupada gave that example. Now, here's another interesting one. Should women be called Prabhu? There you are, you're laughing. Last year, in Russia, one thing in Russia, we have quite a lot of devotees there, but they're mostly, in many ways, they're cut off from the rest of ISKCON, which functions through the English language. There's not much English in Russia. Most people speak Russian and maybe a local language like Tatar, or like there are many local languages also. So when I said that in the Western countries it's become the norm among many devotees to call women Prabhu, the whole room, there's about 120 devotees there, men and women, they just spontaneously started laughing. They just thought it was so funny. But at the GBC level, you'll see the GBC minutes, they refer to so-and-so, Prabhu, and it's a female. Again, this is coming from modern feminism. The idea is that, well, men and women, we're all equal on the spiritual platform, so everyone should be called Prabhu. And there's one letter from Prabhupada in which he says that all Vaishnavas should be addressed as Prabhu. So they see, Prabhupada said all Vaishnavas. So women are also Vaishnavas. So, but it's strange. It's like, well, my response to this is that, well, actually, if you say we're all on the spiritual platform, and then women should also be called Prabhu, if you want to get really spiritual and consider, we're not the bodies anyway, we're all spirit, soul, and spirit, soul is Prakriti. So instead of referring to Radha Prabhu, it's better to refer to Sridhar Mataji. Just call everyone Mata. If you really want to make everyone equal on the spiritual platform, then call everyone Mataji. Of course, there are many instructions from Prabhupada also that all women should be addressed as mother. So that qualifies the statement that all Vaishnavas should be addressed as Prabhu. Well, you're seeing the body, you see, you're not seeing the Vaishnav. But yeah, we are supposed to see the body. We are supposed to see a difference. It's stated in Shastra that as long as one has material attachment, he should continue to act in terms of Varnashram. And even great acharyas who are beyond the platform of Varnashram, they act on the platform of Varnashram to teach others. That's why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati took sannyas. He was leading in many ways a more renounced life than before he took sannyas. But after he took sannyas, he had big buildings and big institution and fancy clothes. Before, he was living like Gaurakishordas Babaji. But to institute Varnashram, he came down to the platform of sannyas to teach others how to live. And some, like Gaurakishordas Babaji Maharaj, they're also like very, you know, they don't follow, they're avadhuts, they don't follow any rules or regulations, but even they follow the regulation of not mixing intimately with women. That one thing, they may not follow any strict sadhana. Gaurakishordas Babaji Maharaj didn't have counting beads. Vanshidas, he didn't chant any rounds. And they didn't mix with women. Gaurakishore was very strict about this, especially. So, as I understand it, this is something just influenced by modern feminism, that's all. It's not actually coming from the spiritual platform. And it's ridiculous. Actually, there's something cited that Prabhupada, in the early days of the movement, he would sometimes call women Prabhu. And there's some evidence that he did that. Now, my understanding of this is, again, Prabhupada, he was, in the beginning, he just gave what he could of Krishna consciousness to people absolutely ignorant. How ignorant was when in the first temple, which was, or the first center of ISKCON, which is at 26 Second Avenue in Manhattan, some of his early followers, they went out and they bought different pictures from an Indian shop. And in those days, you wouldn't get pictures like this everywhere and anywhere. To get some print from Bridge Passy prints in Mathura, or there's another one in Chennai, Madras. There were two main companies which made pictures of demigods, huh? It may be, yeah. So to get a picture from India was something very rare and special. So without telling Prabhupada once, they decorated the whole temple with all pictures, and Prabhupada, he was very pleased to see, and he said, this is good, this isn't good, like this. And then they came to a picture of Hanuman. And they asked Prabhupada, well, what's this? And Prabhupada said, oh, that's Hanuman. He said, and then one of them said, well, is it a cat? They were so ignorant, they had no idea who Hanuman is. Can you imagine? They had no idea that every five-year-old in India, probably even the Muslims, have heard of Hanuman. But they were so ignorant of all these things. And the first initiation ceremony, Prabhupada, he cooked, he cleaned, he served everything out, and they said, "Oh, thanks a lot, Swami," and all left. And he had to clean up everything himself. Never complained. When someone volunteered, he said, "Okay, now, and all right, yes, come and help." And later he said, "Now this is how you serve Guru." Later he instituted all these things. So as I understand it, that's one of those things that Prabhupada maybe introduced that you call Prabhu, and then they started calling the women Prabhu, and he didn't try to change that. But later he did, and he said women should be addressed as mothers. And even there's a letter where he said the male devotees should address the women as my dear mother, and the women should address the male devotees as my dear son, and all this kind of thing. Now, here's another example. One of Srila Prabhupada's disciples was called Bharadraj. You've heard the name Bharadraj, right? Bharadraj. Really? You've heard the name Bharadraj? But you know that name. It's a well-known name in India, right? Bharadraj. There's a whole gotra, Bharadraj. No, there isn't. It's Bharadvaj. But Prabhupada's disciple, he gave the name of one disciple, Bharadvaj. But they all misunderstood it as Bharadraj. They heard the word Raj before. Prabhupada went along with it. He didn't always try to change everything immediately. There are many. There's one Prabhupada disciple. He's up to now. He's not sure what his name is, because he thinks for many years he thought he was Ladu Vangshi, and then someone told him, "Well, that doesn't seem like a right name." But he's not sure, because he can't ask Prabhupada what actually his name should be. It must be Yadu Vangshi. Presumably it's Yadu Vangshi or Ladu Bhoji or something like that. But Ladu Vangshi, because the devotees, they knew the word Ladu very well. So when Prabhupada said Yadu Vangshi or whatever, they heard Ladu Vangshi. And even there's one kind of ladu which was very popular among the devotees. For some reason, they used to call it laglu. But there's no Indian word laglu, but somehow they call it laglu. Should be ladu, but somehow they call it lug. So there's many funny things like that. But at some point, Prabhupada said that all women should be addressed as mother. And as Harishwari Prabhu, who was living with Prabhupada day and night, for several years, I think he joined Prabhupada in 73 or 74. He said, "During all the time I was with Prabhupada, I never heard him call women Prabhu. It was always Mata or Mother like this." So, But in the Western countries, among our devotees, they're insisting. No, some of them, many of them, they just take it as normal. New people are joining. You call all the women Prabhu. Isn't that strange? So again, it's like saying Mr. Sonia Gandhi or something like that. Prabhu is a male term. Or some of them thought up, "Well, that's a bit strange. Maybe we should call them Prabhvi," which is we don't find it anywhere in Sanskrit literature, but it is the female form of the term. So. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Cultural speculations. Better to stick to the old culture as far as possible. It may be difficult, there are many other points, how women should dress and how they should interact. I mean, talking about interaction, traditionally, in any public event like this, this is a public or semi-public event, then the men and the women, they wouldn't see each other. Did any older people see that? They would have the chik, it's called in Bengali or Hindi, chik. It's like a bamboo screen. You've heard of that? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he gave Harinam to one of his young female disciples. He didn't see her. He gave it through behind a bamboo screen. I saw a description of the Vaidyas. They used to take the pulse of women patients from behind a screen using a thin cotton thread. They'd tie it around the wrist, and they wouldn't see them. They were so strict, and they think I'm being strict. They have no idea. Oh, okay, I'm almost ready for questions, so you can be ready. If you'd like to write down, that would be better. Then you can say what you want to say without being embarrassed also. I'm open. I don't mind. You can challenge or whatever, or agree, disagree. We can discuss it according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Just one little anecdote. There are many, I could say. But one of my female disciples in Bosnia, which is a Muslim-dominated country in Europe, which was prominent in the world news about, 15 years ago, because there was a lot of... It was a war. There was a full-fledged civil war going on there. So she's from a Muslim family, and I think her father died a long time ago, or divorced. I don't know exactly. I can't remember. But her mother's a devotee. Her mother died recently. She was also an initiated devotee, and her sister's a devotee. But she opted to marry a Muslim man who's, because, I mean, he's quite open to her being a devotee. He's not fanatical Muslim, and he's very nice, actually. I met him a few times. But she thought that if I marry a Muslim man, you're more likely to get a steady husband than if I marry a devotee. And there are certain difficulties for her Krishna conscious associated with that. But it's interesting she thought that. I mean, in that sense, the Islamic culture is, at least she considered that she'd have a better chance than with a devotee. Of course, Islam also has a lot of social problems internally, but they do have many of the ideas right also, even though, well, again, these are controversial points. But she's at home. She's qualified as an architect, and she works at home also. Her husband's also an architect. She has children. But for her preaching, she writes a little blog in her own language, explaining her life as a devotee, and just, you know, simple things, because she lives a fairly simple life. It's nothing extraordinary to be a housewife in Bosnia. But she's got a lot of appreciation from that, from Muslim girls who appreciate that this is her religious commitment and her family commitment, and how she's putting the two together. They appreciate that. So, and she's made friendship with several Muslim girls through this, and they appreciate that this is a good religious process in which the women live very respectfully, and they're very religious in that particular environment. Although they don't, the Muslim girls in Bosnia, they now Bosnia is part of the European Union, or is about to become, and they don't have to. They can also be as loose as they like. That's encouraged. But there are still, if that culture is there, people will appreciate. And what's this about women? Their freedom, and they're not exploited. They're more exploited than at any time in history. There was no gross pornography. Pornography is a huge business. It's the most degrading thing to womankind. And even all these Bollywood movies, it's degrading to women, to that women should set role models as being, as Prabhupada would say, they're just like prostitutes, actually. I mean, these women who people think are so great and so wonderful, they're just prostitutes. They're just showing their bodies off and to millions of men, and they can be hired for work. It's extremely low class and extremely degrading, and It's not auspicious for anyone. And they're advertising, oh, now women have got so much opportunity to what? To degrade themselves. And they make it difficult to have women to have the opportunity to lead a respectable and sheltered and religious life. They'll call it, oh, you're stupid, and what a horrible society. Again, it's a demoniac society. So, all right, I'm ready for questions, but just you have to wait 5 minutes. So, in the meantime, please chant Hare Krishna.